Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest, and I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on Do You Speak Credit when we come back. Well, Joe Smith started the day early, having set his alarm clock made in Japan for 6 a.m., and while his coffee pot, also made in Japan, is perking, he puts his blow dryer made in Taiwan to work and then shaves with his electric razor made in Hong Kong. He puts on a dress shirt made in Taiwan, his designer jeans made in Singapore, and a pair of tennis shoes made in Korea. Then, after cooking up some breakfast in his new electric skillet, made in the Philippines, he sits down to figure out on his calculator made in Mexico how much he can spend today. Then, after setting his watch, made in Switzerland, to the radio, made in Hong Kong, he goes out and gets in his car, made in Germany, and goes looking, as he has for many months, for a good-paying American job. At the end of another discouraging and fruitless day, Joe decides to relax for a while, so he puts on a pair of sandals made in Brazil, pours himself a glass of wine made in France, and then turns on his TV made in Japan, and then ponders again why it is that he can't find a good-paying American job. Well, instead of a good-paying American job, why doesn't Joe look for a good-paying American private business dealing in property instead of income? It's a wild new concept. Now, if you'd like to tap into the power of private business, why don't you call and order my free general law CD package first? Now, that's a 4-hour commentary on the law in general. It's informative, it's entertaining, it's educational, and best of all, it's free of charge. Why don't you call now? The number 417-273-4967. And if you're online, you can go to the website georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email machine on the website and send an email request for that free general law CD package. Remember, georgegordon.org, or call direct 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about Do You Speak Credit, because credit is pervasive in the United States. Indeed, credit is pervasive worldwide. But in the case of credit in the United States, it's like an epidemic. Americans are in debt in consumer spending alone to the tune of $70,000 per family. $70,000 in consumer debt per family. Then you've got the mortgage on top of that. And then like as not, you may have some other debts that are outside the realm of consumer debt. That's your big screen TV and your SUV and your furniture loans and maybe a half dozen credit cards or so. Now, this consumer credit contract that you signed with each and every one of these purchases has some very special clauses in them. 12 to be exact. Remember these 12 clauses. One of them is called the wage assignment clause. That was number one. And then the waiver of right to privacy clause. That's two. The right to collect deficiency clause. That's three. Then the waiver of state property exemption clause. That was the last one we covered, and now we're going to look at number five, the blanket security interest clause. Listen to these words. Words contained in the contract that you signed when you bought your new car, your big screen TV, or signed that furniture contract to furnish your home. Here's what you agreed to. It says, this note is secured by a security interest in all of the following described personal property and proceeds thereof. If checked at left, consumer goods, furniture, appliances, and bric-a-brac, now owned and hereafter acquired, including replacements and located in or about the premises of the debtor's residence, unless otherwise stated, or at any other location to which the goods may be moved. In addition, all other goods and chattels of like nature hereafter acquired by the debtor and kept or used in or about said premises and substituted for any property mentioned. Proceeds and products of the collateral are also covered. Now, what that means in plain English is this. If I don't pay, you can take all of the household goods that I own. Now take a look around your home. As I look around my office, I see bookcases filled with books. I see an airplane hanging on the wall. I see some model airplanes that are up on top of the bookcase. I see a recording device, a fan. I see a chest of drawers, a desk. I see a lamp on my desk. I see a number of CDs. I see a copy machine. And over in the corner, I see a whiteboard. If I were to sign one of these contracts, and then if I failed to make the payments on my big screen TV from Best Buy or Target, and they sued me and took me into court, they would get a judgment against me, and the judge, looking at this specific clause number 5, the blanket security interest clause, would then give my creditor the go-ahead, and they could come out here with a moving truck and they could take my whiteboard and my airplane on the wall and my model airplanes and my chest of drawers, my desk, the fan, the recording device, all of the CDs, all of the books, everything that's in here. Did you know that? Do you think that that's right? Do you think that that's moral? Do you think that that's ethical? It's certainly not illegal. That's what the law provides for, and that's what you agree to when you sign these contracts. And I want to remind you that the contract is written in very fine print. If you're an old man like me, you won't be able to read that fine print without glasses. And I want to tell you, boys and girls, I don't wear glasses. I don't need glasses. I have 20/20 vision. And I can't read the fine print without glasses. So I don't think that very many other people can read that fine print without glasses either. Now, do you believe for a minute that the reason that these stores, banks, credit card companies, etc., are printing that fine print on 8.5 by 11 sheets of paper, which is your consumer contract, do you think they're using that fine print to save paper so that they won't have to cut down as many trees because they are so ecologically concerned about the environment that they want to save trees? Do you believe that? Let me tell you, the reason that it's written in fine print is so that you won't read it. Because if you read that statement in that contract while you were sitting in the office of this salesman trying to sell you this Ford Explorer, if you were sitting in the office of the credit department of Best Buy while you're negotiating to buy this big screen TV, and you read this statement that says, this note is secured by a security interest in all of the following described personal property and proceeds thereof. And then at the left, it's checked off. It says consumer goods. That means consumer goods. On my desk, I have a Texas Instrument calculator. That's a consumer good. They could take that. If checked at left, consumer goods. I've got a lamp on my desk. They could take that. I have a stapler and I have some batteries here on my desk. Those are all consumer goods. They could take all of those. Whatever they found here in my house, they could just load it up and take it. Would you agree to that if you knew what they were after? Then furniture. Okay, they can take my desk. They can take this chest of drawers over here. And they can take the stand that the copy machine is sitting on. And then appliances. Well, the copy machine is an appliance. They could go upstairs to the kitchen and take the dishwasher, the stove, the refrigerator, the juicer, all of the appliances that are sitting on the counter up there, you know, like the, you know, like that whirly thingamajiggy up there that makes juice, and your juicers and mixers and Vitamixers and that bread maker, all that stuff that's sitting on the counter. And then the bric-a-brac. Bric-a-brac. Do you know what bric-a-brac is? The little doilies, you know, that are on the arms of the chairs. And those crazy little thingies, those porcelain thingies that your wife bought and she sticks around in all these little nooks and crannies around the house. You know, just little odds and ends of stuff over there called bric-a-brac that, you know, she's paid $8, $9 and set them on the coffee table. And maybe it's little dogs or little cats or something like that. Bric-a-brac. Doilies. Little things like that. Little personal things that people buy, put around their house. Now owned and hereafter acquired. Now, on the day that you sign this contract, thereafter the stuff that you own right now and hereafter acquired. So if a year or 2 years from now you acquire some bric-a-brac, you acquire some appliances, you acquire some more furniture, that gets added on to it even though it isn't checked off. How's that? This is called collateral. Now, you're going in here to buy this Ford Explorer, or you're going to buy the big screen TV. Isn't the Ford Explorer itself sufficient collateral for the note? No. No, it's not. The big screen TV that you're paying $3,000 for, isn't that sufficient collateral? No. No, they want the bric-a-brac. They want the recording device. They want the Texas Instrument calculator. They're going to take it all. And you're going to agree to it. Only the worst part of it is you're not ever going to read this clause because it's in fine print. What they hand you is an application. And you sign this application. You sign 4 or 5 pieces of paper. And when the contract itself comes out, in big letters at the bottom, it says name and address and phone number and so on, but the terms and conditions of this thing are in so much fine print, you can't read it. It's like an insurance policy. And then, even if you could read it, you know, assuming that you've got some good glasses and you pull it out and you actually could read the words, you probably wouldn't understand the words if you weren't trained in law. You know, now owned and hereafter acquired. Whatever you own now or whatever you own in the future is going to be collateral, including replacements and located in or about the premises at the debtor's residence, unless otherwise stated, or at any other location to which the goods may be moved. So, listen, you may have these goods today. As you sign these in October of 2005, then in March of 2006, you may move to another location, a different address. You may acquire a new appliance in the process. So then in October of 2006, when you don't make your payments, they come out to, and they take anything that's hereafter acquired, including the replacement. So if a light bulb burns out, they'll take the replacement. If you've got 6 light bulbs on the shelf in the closet, they'll take the light bulbs. Now, typically they don't do that. They typically repossess the car. And they take a judgment against you. And then if they've got any other collateral, big stuff, they usually go after it. But what I'm pointing out to you is that if they wanted to, they could come after the light bulbs on the shelf in the closet. And there's a clause in the contract that permits that. And the only thing that keeps them in most cases from doing that is that it costs more to go out and get that little junk than it's worth. You can't sell those light bulbs, those used light bulbs. You can't get enough out of them to pay the guy to go out there and pick them up and load them up and take them. My point is, it isn't because they can't pick them up and take them. And if there was ever a time when it became worthwhile, they'd do it. Or if they become vindictive, and then they just want to really stick it to you, they can do it. Now, in addition, all other goods and chattels of like nature hereafter acquired by the debtor and kept or used in or about the said premises and substituted for any property mentioned. Let's suppose that you've got a juicer, but the juicer you get rid of for some reason and you replace it with a Vitamix. Well, okay, on the contractor it lists juicer over here, that's an appliance, but if you change the appliance to a Vitamix, there's the provision right there, and they'll say to the judge, hey, he's got a Vitamix sitting on the counter, we want the Vitamix because his Walker juicer has been replaced by the Vitamix, or in any event, the Walker juicer is gone. Or we walked into his house, or we know that he has, or it says here that here's what he's got. Now, I wanted to want to point out one other thing to you. Banks are really notorious for this. The bank sucks you in. When I was in the business world years ago, every 6 months my bank would call me and say, we'd like to have a new financial statement. You know, they send you a little notice in the mail. And they send you a financial statement. Now, your last financial statement you filled out, and you told them how many cars and pickups you had and appliances and how much money you had in the bank and one thing and another. And this financial statement affects the amount of money that you can borrow. And you know that. And so you inflate it. So you see, you say, I've got a 1963 International pickup. And you say that pickup is worth $600. Okay. Well, so you add $200 to it. It's worth $800. So you put $800 down there for that pickup. Maybe you have four or five pickups. So you list each one of the pickups on your financial statement and you inflate their value by a couple $100, don't you? Because if you got five pickups and you inflate their value by $200, it gives you another $1,000 worth of assets. So you get down here on the bottom line and you've listed your furniture and money in the bank and tools and equipment and pickups and everything that you've got over here. And let's say you got $200,000 worth of assets. Truth of the matter is, if you took all that crap out and you sold it for cash, you'd be lucky if you could get 50 cents on the dollar for it. And the bank knows that. So you've got $200,000 worth of stuff that if you went out and sold, you might get $100,000 for it. But what it does is it gives you a $50,000 line of credit at the bank. So you walk into the bank and you say, well, I'd like to borrow some money. And the banker says, well, how much do you need? And you say, well, I need about $25,000. He says, well, there's no problem. There's no problem here. We'll give you $25,000. In fact, we could give you up to $50,000. Now, you've got $200,000 worth of stuff that you paid $400,000 for, which in reality, if you went out and sold it at the local pawn shop, you'd get $100,000 for it on a good day. And the banker says, Jesus, we'll loan you $50,000 against all of the stuff that you've got. And you list everything that you've got on that financial statement, and they give you this line of credit, and you go out and buy, sell, and trade, and do business. And if at some point in the future, like all contractors go through, you have to... You get foreclosed on. You can't make your payments, and so you gotta file for bankruptcy or something like that. Bankruptcy actually helps you because, you see, under the bankruptcy law, they won't let them take the bric-a-brac or the appliances or the furniture out of your house or your tools of your trade. I mean, they'll take all of your business equipment. They'll take your office equipment and computers and copy machines and pickup trucks and all of that. But they'll let you keep one pickup, and they'll let you keep a box of tools, and they'll let you keep a car that's worth $500 or $1,000 or something like that. There are standards that they let you keep. Unless, of course, you have signed one of these agreements. Remember we talked about this a little earlier here. It's called the Waiver of State Property Exemption Clause. Waiver of State Property Exemption Clause. Remember, we covered this one yesterday, where it says, each of us hereby both individually and severally waives any or all benefit or relief from homestead exemption and all other exemptions or moratoriums to which the signers of any of them may be entitled under the laws of this or any state, now in force or hereafter to be passed as against this debt or any renewal thereof. So here's your state law that gives you certain exemptions. You can't put this up for collateral. And you've signed an agreement over here that says, yeah, I'm going to waive those state exemptions and you can come in here and you can take that too. Now, fortunately for you, it's against the law. That's an illegal clause. And if you've got a state that gives you these benefits, you can't sign them away. Fortunately for you. But you agreed to. Now, here's the kicker. They'll come in here and they will enforce this clause against you. And you'll say, well, I've got this homestead exemption. And they'll say, yeah, but you signed that away. And about half the time, they will cunningly coerce people into voluntarily giving up the assets, the collateral, even though the clause is illegal and it's protected by the Homestead Act or it's protected by federal law. And they'll steal that from you, too. And that's based upon your ignorance. Because if you were smart enough to know that, you wouldn't have signed that contract to start with. And so they prey upon the most ignorant people, number one, and then the poorest and the most vulnerable, number two. Here in Missouri, they've got a law. They got a program here. It's called a car title loan. And I was in Springfield the other day, and I think I must have seen about five or six car title loan companies. And they, in this state, they charge 9.9% interest per month. No, not 9% interest per annum, not per year. It's 9.9% a month. And it was passed by a Democratic legislature and a Democratic governor. Now, you tell me the Democrats are your friends. Now, I can't imagine anybody doing this, but if you had a car that's worth $5,000 and you had it bought and paid for and you get up against it and you really need some money, you go down to this car title company and you put your car title on the counter and they're going to give you cash. How much cash are you going to get for this $5,000 car? $2,500 tops, max. Half the value of the car. That's what you're going to get. And you're going to sign one of these agreements right here. And then they're going to give you the $2,500, and you got to pay 9.9% interest a month for the $2,500. Do you know how much money that is? Let's try it out. $2,500 times 118%. You're going to have to pay back $2,950. Now, you got a $5,000 car, you borrow $2,500, you got to pay $2,500 plus $2,950 in interest. So you take $2,950, let's just do that, $2,950, and then let's take $2,500. You've got to pay back $5,450 on this $5,000 car. You got that? The car's worth $5,000 and you got to pay this guy back $450 more than the car is worth, and 1 year from now that car ain't going to be worth $5,000. Remember that. See, that's why they won't give you $5,000 for a $5,000 car. Because a year from now that car isn't going to be worth $5,000. And that's assuming that you could get the $2,500. They'd probably give you less than that. They've got all kinds of collateral. But then in addition to that, in this consumer product or this consumer credit contract, they're going to have you sign with all of these neat little provisions in here, including the bric-a-brac and a waiver of privacy and all the rest of it. And 9.9%. Let me ask you this. Can you tell me how much interest constitutes usury? Can you tell me how much interest would be unconscionable? Would it be 10% interest? Would it be 20%, 30%, 50%, 100% interest? I mean, I'm going to loan you $100 and you got to pay me back $200. Would you say that that's unconscionable? Well, listen, the legislature of Missouri enacted a law and the governor signed it and they can charge you 118% interest a year. Boys and girls, that's beyond usury. That's beyond conscience. Hell, the mafia never charged that kind of interest. Loan sharks don't get that kind of interest. But you can sure get that kind of interest if you can get a license to put in a car title company. And what kind of people would have to go to a car title company and pawn their title to their car and agree to pay 118% interest? Aren't those the poorest people in the land? Aren't you oppressing the poor when you do that? And that's your politicians doing that. That's not some illegal mafioso loan sharking outfit operating in New York. I mean, we're talking about the legislature of Missouri. Okay, that's called your blanket security interest clause. Let's take a look at the next one. It's called the confession of judgment clause. Confession of judgment. Confession. Sounds kind of religious to me. Sounds kind of Catholic. That on Thursday we're going to go in and confess to something here. Well, I want you to notice here. It says, to secure payment hereof, in order to give us enough collateral to make us loan you the money, the undersigned, that's you, the undersigned, that's the sucker borrowing this money, jointly and severally, that is, I do personally and individually, and then jointly and severally with my wife, or you can sever my wife from me jointly and take it from her irrevocably. There is no way that we can revoke this contract, authorize any attorney of any court of record to appear for any one or more of them in such court in term or vacation after default in payment hereof and confess a judgment without process in favor of the creditor hereof for such amount as may then appear unpaid hereon to release all errors which may intervene in any such proceedings and to consent to immediate execution upon such judgment, hereby ratifying every act of such attorney hereunder. Listen, in plain language, here's what that means. If you should sue me because I haven't paid you, I agree in advance that you should win. Even if I have a good reason for not paying you, in fact, your lawyer can represent me at my expense. Did you get that? Boys and girls, listen to this. This is called the Confession of Judgment Clause. It'll be in your consumer credit contract that you sign when you buy a new car, when you buy a big screen TV, or when you get a bank credit card. It's in fine print. You never read it. You didn't know this was in there. That's because you don't speak credit. But it says in plain language, if you ever sue me because I haven't paid you, I agree in advance that you should win. And even if I have a good reason for not paying you, in fact, your lawyer can represent me at my expense. I agree to pay the court costs. I agree to pay for the lawyer. I agree to give you a confession of judgment. You know, it's no wonder that Americans, when they go into court, they complain and they say there's no justice. Well, that's true. There isn't any justice here because you've waived your right to justice. You've signed a contract and you have agreed in advance Let's just bring this down on a me and you basis. You come to me and you say, hey, George, would you loan me $1,000? And I say, sure. Well, Tom, here's the $1,000. I'm going to let you just sign this contract. Now, in this contract, in order for me to secure payment hereof, the undersigned, that's you, Tom, jointly and severally with your wife, Betty, irrevocably authorize me to hire any attorney to represent you in any court of record in the state of Missouri for any one or more of you or your wife in such court in term or vacation after default in payment. So when you've missed your first payment by one day, I can go in and get a confession of judgment without you even being present, without you even being noticed, without ever sending you a letter that says you're late in your payment, without any process, and take a judgment in favor of me against you for whatever amount that I write into the blank, and then you agree in advance to release me and my lawyer from any error that we may commit. Like I've made a mistake, like you're not in default at all. And if I've made a mistake, you are going to release me from those errors in any such legal proceedings and to consent to immediate execution upon such judgment, hereby ratifying every act of such attorney hereunder. Anything that I do, anything that my attorney does, even if we do it in error, even if we do it because we're just horses patooties, you have no recourse, and you've agreed to that in advance. Can you do that? Sure. You can waive your rights anytime you want to. It's a choice that you make. Now, you're going to be sitting there saying, but I didn't know that. Well, boys and girls, you don't have to know in order to be liable. You don't have to be informed. You can waive your rights due to your ignorance. You don't have to have anybody explain this to you. Nobody has to sit you down, slap you up alongside the head and said, sit down and shut up and listen to me while I explain to you the foolishness and the stupidity that you're about to enter into. Nobody has to do that. Hell, you can do that all by yourself without any advice, without any persuasion, without any consent whatsoever. Just sign the contract right here. That's all the salesman wants is your signature on the contract. Now, fortunately, in many states now, after you've signed this contract, there's what they call a 3-day cooling off period. At any time up to 72 hours after you've signed this contract, because a lot of people get high pressured into signing contracts, and then they get home and they say, God, that was really dumb. I don't want to do that, and I want to rescind that. Yeah, you can do that. But then after that 3-day cooling off period is done, and after you've made a payment or two on this thing, you know, you get locked in and then there's no turning back. Hang on a second. I got to give you a reminder here and we'll be back with more here on Do You Speak Credit right after this. Now you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States and worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org. The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. For more information, just go to our homeschooling page on the website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has our radio log schedule and archives. It can be accessed through the website. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest, and the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, economics, education, history, politics, religion, news, and current events 7 days a week. And the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Remember to order yours. Please call the law school direct at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They do not necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this network or of this local radio station. So for more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, remember our website is georgegordon.org or call the law school direct at 417-273-4967. All right, talking about do you speak credit, that's what we call the confession of judgment clause. Now we've covered six. The wage assignment clause, that's where you agree that they can come in and take it right out of your paycheck. The waiver of right to privacy clause, that's where you waive your Fourth Amendment rights to be secure in your person, houses, papers, and effects. The right to collect deficiency clause, so if they foreclose on you, take the property away from you, and then sell it to one of their close buddies for 10 cents on the dollar, they can still come back and collect the other 90% from you. Then there's the waiver of state property exemption clause, which is patently illegal and wouldn't be upheld in most states, but they use that to cunningly coerce you into waiving your rights, because obviously you didn't know what your rights were when you signed this contract to start with. And then the blanket security interest clause, that's where everything that you've got in your house, whether it's listed in this contract or not, including the bric-a-brac that you have and the knick-knacks that are in the cabinets and so on, we can come in and take that if we so desire. And then the confession of judgment clause. You agree to pay for your own execution. It reminds me of the, in this state here, they arrest you, they try you, they convict you, they jail you, and then they charge you room and board in the jail. They make you pay for your own punishment. Isn't that just real special? All right, let's take a look here at the cosigner guarantee clause. You ever have somebody come up to you and say, "Dad, would you sign this for me?" "Hey, Dad, would you sign for me so I can buy this or that or something else?" It's called the cosigner guarantee clause. So when you're a young person and you're going out for credit for the first time, oftentimes a creditor will say, "You've got to have a cosigner." Now, the Bible tells you plainly never to go surety for somebody. Have you ever signed as a cosigner for somebody? Well, there's six statutes in the Bible that tell you not to do that. Now, of course, God doesn't know what he's talking about, and so we go out and we cosign for people. I've done it a couple of times and got burned. I'll tell you a little story here. My brother Jim, one time, he needed some tires for his big pickup. He had one of these great big pickups, you know, you need a step ladder to climb up inside of it. And I had these special tires on, and this was back about 1975 or something like that, you know, when these tires were about $150 a piece. $600, and he needed these tires for his pickup. So he went down to Al Hall Tire Company there in Boise, and he wanted to buy the tires, and Al told him, he says, "You got to have a cosigner. I don't know you, and you don't have credit established here." And so my brother called me. Well, you can't tell your brother no, can you? So when my baby brother called and he said, "Hey, I got to have a cosigner," I called Al and I said, "Yeah, give him the tires, Al, and I'll cosign for him." So I did. I cosigned. And you guessed it, baby brother didn't pay Al the $600 for the tires. And then guess who gets called up by the collection agency and says, "Hey, big brother, you signed here for baby brother, now you pay us." Now, how do you like that? And if you've signed this, you as a co-signer have signed on the contract for all the rest of these little thingies over here, so that if I don't pay, they can come take my appliances and take my Texas Instrument calculator and my bric-a-brac, because I'm making the same agreement that the borrower is making. Now, if you wouldn't sign this contract, you sure as hell ought not to go co-sign for somebody else, because in reality, the co-signer is the borrower. That's what the real bottom line is. I mean, you're better off to go down, pay the $600, buy the tires, and then have baby brother pay you. I mean, that you'd be better off doing it. It'll be better for your credit. Now, you know, if somebody says to me, you know, yeah, but if you don't do this and sign these contracts, you won't get any credit rating. Who in the hell needs credit if you're a lender? Why would a lender need credit? You know, God told us in the Bible, he said, you will lend to many and you shall not borrow. Now, he's telling you, don't borrow, just lend. You want to be a lender, not a borrower. And so we go down and we borrow from the Jews, and then we rant and rave against these dirty, low-down Jews because they're the lenders, they're the masters, and we are their servants. And then we get real angry with them. Now, you know, I've been a borrower for many, many years. I finally quit, but, you know, for years I used to borrow. And I never did experience any lender coming up to me with a .45, stick it in my face and say, sign the contract or I'll blow you away. I always went in to the lender with my hat in my hand and said, please, please, won't you lend me some money? And he said, okay, I'll lend you some money, but you got to agree to these terms and conditions. And if you don't agree to these terms and conditions, I'm not going to lend you the money. And so I said, yes, sir, I will agree to all these terms and conditions. That's called a guardian-ward relationship. The borrower is servant to the lender. Now, if you want to be a servant, go borrow some money. Go be a borrower. If you want to be a master, then stop borrowing. Well, here's your cosigner guarantee clause. Listen to this. It says, in consideration of the making and acceptance of the within note by the debtor and creditor named herein, respectively, undersigned jointly and severally, unconditionally, guarantees to the said creditor and to any assignee of the said creditor. So he can sell this note to somebody else. So you're agreeing to the payment of all monies due or to become due under the said note in accordance with their terms thereof. So you're agreeing to all of the terms and conditions of this contract, you co-signer. You know, the wage assignment clause, the waiver of right to privacy, the right to collect deficiency, the waiver of state property exemption, the blanket security interest clause, the confession of judgment clause. You're agreeing to all of those and more when you co-sign. And also the full performance of the covenants on his or their part therein contained, and undersigned does hereby expressly agree that anything in said note to the contrary, notwithstanding any lack of capacity or liability on the part of the debtor. Notwithstanding. No excuses. The undersigned cosigner hereby consents to all extensions of time for the making of any or all payments by the debtor, and further guarantees the payment of all said payments due by reason of said extensions. Notice of acceptance of this guarantee, notice of non-payment and non-performance, notice of amount of indebtedness outstanding at any time, protest, demand, and prosecution of collection, foreclosure, and possessory remedies are hereby expressly waived. So, if there are any defenses that you might advance as a co-signer for the non-payment of this debt, such as the product was no good or I committed fraud against you, notwithstanding any excuse, any defense that you might have, whether it's reasonable or unreasonable, is not permitted. So, Mr. Co-signer, when you sign this, you pay and there are no excuses. And when I say no, what is it about no that you fail to understand? So you come into court and you say to the judge, but judge, there was a defect in the Ford Explorer. It rolled over and killed his wife. And he's suing him because of a defect, a manufacturer's defect. And that's why we stopped making the payments, because it's totally wrecked and there was a defect and they're liable for the defect. No, no, there's no excuses. Keep making your payments. And you say, but that's not right. Well, of course it's not right. That's why I'm bringing this to your attention. But it's legal. 118% interest isn't right. But it's legal. And you'll pay it. Or pay the consequences. And then you'll complain and say, well, that's not right. That's not fair. Well, that's wrong. Yep, that's, you're 100% correct. It's totally wrong. It violates the law of God, but you know, you're not practicing the law of God when you sign these consumer credit contracts. God, in the Bible, told you with specificity, don't do that. Number one, it's an unjust weight or balance. Number two, it contains usury and interest. Number three, it's a collateralized loan. It's against the law to pay collateral or to demand it. It's against the law to pay interest or collect it. And it's against the law to deal in unjust weights and balances. And when you walk in and sign this contract, you're in effect saying, God, you made a mistake. God, I'm going to fix your mistake. I'm going to pay usury, I'm going to put up collateral, and I am going to use commercial paper to do it. So don't sit there and complain and piss and moan about God now. It's a choice that we have to make as individuals, and we make these choices. Now you may say, well, I made this choice and I was ignorant. Well, okay. I was 17 years old once too, and I made these choices, and I was ignorant, and I paid my penalties, and you're going to pay yours, especially after the 17th of October, next Monday morning. The law is going to change pretty dramatically here for you debtors out there. Bankruptcy is not going to be near the game that it was in the past. Now listen, in plain language, here's what the cosigner guarantee clause means. It means if I don't pay, you can collect from my cosigner without trying to collect from me first. You don't even have to warn my cosigner that I've fallen behind in my payments. See, let's suppose that you signed for baby brother. They don't, baby brother never called me and said, hey, you're in default. L. Hall Tire Company never called me and said, hey, the payments haven't been made. The first notice I got was when I was sued by Action Collection Agency of Boise, Idaho. They just sent me a note and said, you owe us $1,320. Pay up or we're coming out and pick up your bric-a-brac and your furniture and appliances. Notice that he borrowed $600. Now, after you don't pay, the price goes up to $1,320. Hey, how would you like to be a co-signer for me? Hey, if a little bit of co-signing is good, wouldn't a whole lot of co-signing be twice as gooder? Let's go out and co-sign for a whole bunch of people, shall we? Yes, sir, if I don't pay, you can collect from my cosigner without trying to collect from me first. You don't have to go talk to my baby brother Jim. You just go talk to big brother George. You go collect from him. Now, here's your attorney's fee clause. This is a good one. In addition, if this agreement is referred to any attorney for collection due to any default or breach of any promise or provision hereunder by debtor, the debtor agrees to pay an attorney's fee of 15% of the total payments then due, plus the court costs. So what this means in real English is, it's a real hassle for you to sue me to collect, so I'll pay for your lawyer. That's what it boils down to. You just go ahead and sue me. And then do you remember this other provision back here? You know, the one that says the confession of judgment clause. Now, you put the confession of judgment clause with the attorney's fees clause together. And it says, if you ever sue me because I haven't paid, I agree in advance that you should win, even if I have a good reason for not paying. In fact, your lawyer can represent me. And I know it's a real hassle for you to sue me to collect, so I'll pay for your lawyer. Now, you're going to agree to that in advance? In fact, you're going to agree to all of that in the contract and never even read these terms and conditions. You didn't even know they were in your contract, did you? Now, let me tell you where they're at. They're in your bank cards. All those credit cards that you've got, you've made these agreements to. And in your consumer contracts, you know, the ones that you use to buy the furniture, the car that you bought, These are the kinds of consumer credit contracts that these clauses are contained in. Are they unconscionable? I should say. Are they unethical? I should say. Let me ask you this. Let's think about this. Let's suppose I came out to your house, and I'm a general contractor, and you want to hire me to remodel your kitchen. And I give you the price, and I say the price is $10,000, and you say, oh my goodness, I've only got $5,000, so maybe I better pull in my horns, and instead of spending $10,000 to fix my kitchen, I'll just spend $5,000. So I'm about to lose $5,000 worth of sale here, and I say, oh, listen, no sense of you denying yourself this $10,000 kitchen just because you don't have the money today. My God, don't postpone remodeling your kitchen until next year when you'll have an opportunity to save another $5,000 and pay cash. Don't deny yourself the pleasure of this new kitchen today. Let me do this. I'll extend credit to you. I have a consumer credit contract here. And here, you just sign here, and the payments are $200 a month, and don't worry about a thing. Just sign right here. Now, do you remember that there is a clause in here that says I can sell this contract to somebody else? I used to sell furniture, so I'll just share this one with you. I had an agreement with a couple of them, Beneficial Finance and the Associates, two big commercial nationwide consumer credit finance companies. They're called finance companies. And as a merchant, I would go to one of these companies to buy my paper. Now, when you come in, I don't say that I'm going to sell this paper to Beneficial or to some finance company. You think that you're buying this from Atlantis Waterbeds or from the Waterbed Factory. And so I sell you this bedroom suite for $6,000, and it's $200 a month and so on. And I tell you it's 12% add-on interest, 12% add-on. What that really works out to be is 32% interest per annum, far less than 118% that we get today. But, you know, back in the olden days, we got 32%. We used to think that usury was anything more than 6% interest. That was usury. That was loan sharking. And then, of course, the bank credit cards came in. Hell, even your local bank down here charges you 15 to 28%. And that's the bank. And then you got these special operations like the title companies, you know, the car title companies. They get to charge 118%. I tell you, boys and girls, the mafia were pikers compared to your state and federal governments and your banks and your finance companies. And they do it legally. I mean, they get the laws passed so that they can rob you right out in the broad daylight, like a bunch of highwaymen. So anyway, you sign up, and then you expect that you're going to be making your payments to me. And one day you get a letter in the mail that says, George Gordon and the Waterbed Factory, they sold your contract to us. So send your payments here to Beneficial Finance. Now, what happens here is that I sold you $6,000 worth of furniture, so I got your signed contract for $6,000. That's a negotiable instrument. I take it down to Beneficial, and they pay me $5,800 for that. They take a $200 cut right off the top. I know that that's going to happen. So I sold you $5,800 worth of furniture for $6,000. If you'd have come in and paid cash, I'd have probably sold you the $6,000 worth of furniture for about $5,000, maybe $4,500. Remember, I had a Keystone markup. I got $3,000 worth of furniture, and I'm selling it to you for $6,000 on time. Can you imagine what you'd do if you walked in there with $100 bills? Now, you couldn't buy it from me for $3,000, but anything over $3,000 would be open to negotiations. And if you had $4,000 in cash and I had this quick sale, $6,000 worth of furniture at retail, I paid $3,000 for it wholesale, and this guy says, I'll give you $4,000 for it, take it or leave it. Do you think I'd let you walk out of the store? Hell no. I'll take that $1,000 profit, give you the $6,000 worth of furniture. I made $1,000. I'll even help you load it up on your pickup. And away you go. Now, if you want to be a lender and you want to have some money in your pocket, instead of buying $6,000 worth of furniture at 32% interest, now let's figure out what you're going to pay for this. You could have bought this furniture for $4,000 cash, but you got $6,000. So let's just take 6,000 times 0.32. That's $1,920 interest for the first year. So that's $7,920. That's you know, we're talking about $8,000 here, boys and girls. We moved this in the first year from $6,000. Now, we're going to give you a 36-month loan. And you know what we're going to do? We're going to charge the interest off on this loan first. So we're going to come up with the interest on the $6,000 loan. Now, remember, all you're concerned about is the payments. You're paying $200 a month payments, but you don't extrapolate those $200 a month payments out for 36, 48, or 60 months. You take your monthly payment for how many years, and that's how much you're paying for this thing. That's the interest and the principal. Then you say to yourself, well, if this guy is charging me $6,000 for this furniture, he paid $3,000 for it. So I've got $3,000 worth of furniture over here that I'm selling you for $6,000 that you're going to pay $8,000 or $9,000 for by the time you pay your interest on it. You know, you're going to pay two or three times as much. You've got to be a pretty wealthy person to throw money around like that. That's why cash is king, and that's why people that deal in cash have money. Those are the lenders. You don't see the guy down at Beneficial Finance going out here and financing his car. He goes out and pays cash for it, and he takes a discount. In fact, if he's smart, he buys a used car and lets the guy that bought it in the first place take it in the shorts. Now, that's called a confession of judgment clause. That means I'm going to pay for all of the court costs. And this is why you people can't go into court. You can't play the game. Because by the time you pay your lawyer, they come to you and they say, well, here's our out-of-court settlement offer. And the out-of-court settlement offer is always less than what it's going to cost you to go litigate. And that's because you've agreed to pay all the litigation costs. And so you're sitting here saying, there's no justice in America. Not in a card game like this. I mean, these guys have got all the cards marked. Hell, they're writing up the contract for you. You're the guy that's agreeing to the terms and conditions that these clowns have already written up. So you got this guy goes to law school. He comes out, he's a lawyer. Now he's a professional shyster. He's a little smarter than you are. He knows how the law works, and he writes the contract for you. You've got a criminal writing the contract. And you're going to sign that? All right, boys and girls, that's a choice that you have to make. But when you make that choice, you're going to have to live with the consequences of it. Now, that's called the cosigner guarantee clause and then the confession of judgment clause. Hey, listen, we got three or four more to go through here, so hang on. Tomorrow night we'll cover a couple, three more of these do you speak credit clauses in your consumer credit contracts. I think you'll be amazed, maybe a little smarter when we get through. All right, I got to remind you that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the law school and The Law Hour, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org. Remember, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order yours, please call the law school at area code 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967 for your free general law CD package. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals by prearrangement. The Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, economics, education, politics, religion, news, and current events 7 days a week. Remember, The Law Hour is carried worldwide on the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. Time's up. I got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. So thanks for listening, and good night, friends.